Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, let's start.
I see.
Hello. Oh, no, let's try again. hello, and welcome to The Good Robot Andes, Season 2, Episode 7. This is a normal episode.
Normal? What's normal these days, episode. Anyway?
So what's normal these days is that we're going to talk about a film. Ooh. My name is Andy Balaam, and this is...
I am Andy Cockerill.
And the film that we're going to talk about today is...
Green Room.
But before we do that, I just want to address the torrent of feedback we've had about the previous episode. Which was about what the internet is made of.
Yes.
And, you know, people loved it, people hated it. The server was practically knocked off its stand with the level of feedback. But please do keep it coming in.
Yeah, keep it coming, because there's been so much feedback that we can't actually address it all on this show.
Or indeed make any of it visible to you in any way.
Yes, there is that as well.
But yeah, if you were bored by the episode about what the internet's made of, let us know. If you loved it and you want more of that and less of this, let us know. We've got topics we could cover, like cryptography, Linux, open source, Raspberry Pi, to make a website.
Can you eat a Raspberry Pi?
You can. But if... Yeah, don't come crying to us.
If you do.
If you do.
You have to go to hospital afterwards. That's it. That seems reasonable. Okay.
Okay. But let's continue with this film. This film, Green Room. So normally what I would do here is I would guess the plot of the film based purely on its title and knowing nothing about it.
Yep.
In this case, I know exactly what it's about. It's a quirky hospital drama set in the safe area of... The Allied forces in Iraq.
Ah, that'd be Green Zone you're thinking of.
Yeah, apart from the hospital drama bit.
Okay. Is it a Disney film? Is it a rollicking story?
It's not a Disney film. What I've done there, cleverly, is I've combined the plots of two other things that start with green.
Ah. So one of them is Green Wing. The other one is Green Zone.
Yes.
Yes. Well, I admire your pluck, Mr. Balaam.
Do you?
But you're wrong on this occasion. You're very, very, very wrong.
I thought for once I got it right.
Indeed. Well, actually, thinking back to season one, I think the one that you got very close to the mark was Nightcrawler, that you said was a lot like Repo Man.
I said it was a Disney man, Disney film.
No, you didn't say it was a rollicking Disney adventure.
It was a quirky take
on
wrestling.
No, that was Foxcatcher.
Okay, yeah.
That you said was a Disney film about people who are catching foxes.
Catching foxes, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so Green Room is a 2015, was released this year. So it was made last year, released this year. American horror film, written and directed by Jeremy Saulnier, who previous to this film has made one other film, one other feature film called Blue Ruin. So he likes his colours, does
he? He only uses colours.
Yes.
Like the Three Colours films.
Yes, indeed.
They only use colours.
And so Green Room is about a travelling hardcore punk rock band in the style of someone like Black Flag.
I really didn't think... though. So seriously, I thought it was going to be some kind of worthy drama set in the green room of a...
Okay.
Of a, like, TV studio.
Are you disappointed now?
No, I'm quite interested.
Okay, no,
I was all set up to be a little bit bored.
This is right up your street.
Right.
And hopefully our listener will enjoy this too. So it's... It's about a travelling hardcore punk rock band who are sort of touring the Pacific Northwest of America. So we're talking like Washington State, Oregon, Northern California. Mm-hmm. And they play a few gigs and they're not getting very, very much money, and it's all a bit of a drag. And then they come across this guy who gives them a tip for a gig. which doesn't go very well. They don't get paid very much money. And he says, look, to make it up for you, to make it up to you, I'll give you this gig. It's in the middle of nowhere. I've got to warn you, though, it's braces and laces. That's what he, that's the euphemism he uses, which we we would know as a skinhead.
Oh, I see.
Bar, braces and laces.
Okay.
So,
okay.
You know, braces and DMs.
Right.
And so,
okay. So, but they're a punk, they're a hardcore punk band.
Yeah, but they're not outside of their... it's not entirely outside of their thing, but they're not that happy about it. But he does say that there's a lot of money in it. They just need to go along, play their stuff and leave, you know, and everything will be fine.
Yeah.
So
duck if when the bottles fly.
Yes, exactly. So the cast includes Anton Yelchin, who very, very sadly died this year, young actor. He played the role of Anton Chekhov in the rebooted Star Trek.
Anton Chekhov?
Yes.
Didn't he write plays?
Hang on. Maybe his name isn't Chekhov. No. So, yes. Ensign Chekhov. Maybe his name's not Anton.
Ah, Ensign.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chekhov wrote The Seagull.
Indeed, he did. Yes.
It means nothing. Don't try and figure out what it means.
I've seen the play of The Seagull. It indeed means nothing.
Yeah. Yes.
It's almost rubbish. Nihilistic in its nothingness.
Yeah, it's rubbish.
It is, yes. Maybe our listener will write in and say it's not rubbish.
It's not rubbish.
So it features Anton Yelchin, an actress, British actress called Imogen Poots, who's been in some pretty good films, actually. She was in Michael Winterbottom's film about the life of Paul Raymond, who was a famous purveyor of smut in London's West End during the 1970s and 80s.
Okay.
She played his daughter in that film. He was played by Steve Coogan, actually. That's a good film. It's called The Look of Love. That's a good film. She was also in a film called... now I'm struggling to think what it was called. It was one of two films about the Ninth Legion in Scotland, sort of that got lost in Scotland. And one of them had Michael Fassbender in.
You love him.
I do, yes.
You're always on about him.
I know, yeah. I've got a man crush on Fassbender. On the Fass.
So she was in that as well. All right, don't tell me what the Ninth Legion... All right, go let's,
okay.
Come on.
So, yeah, come on, get on with it. It also
so
features,
what did she... What character is she?
She plays a sort of lonely woman who is viewed by locals as being a witch. But in this film... In Green Room.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm really wanting to focus.
Okay, so in Green Room, she's a girlfriend of one of the skinhead types.
Okay. Yeah. Who we're going to meet soon.
Who we are going to meet soon.
Okay.
So the... But the singer in the band is not really on board with just going along and playing a set and then leaving.
Okay.
He wants to go there and shake things up a bit because, you know...
All right, he wants to show them.
Yeah. So they play...
A punk.
In the first track they play is a track by the Dead Kennedys.
Okay.
Called this isn't the actual title. I'm sure our listener can figure out what the actual title is. Nazi punks, please go away. So they
don't write in if you figure
it out. If you figured it out, yeah.
Well, you can write in and just let us know that you figured it out.
Yes. So they play this track first to, let's say, unhappiness in the crowd, although nothing kicks off. The crowd are not terribly happy. Then they play their normal set.
So when they arrive, is it quite...
It's quite an intimidating place.
Intimidating.
Yeah, it's like hardcore music playing and lots of blokes with shaved heads and bomber jackets, DMs, braces. You know, it's exactly what you think it's going to be like. Yeah. Loads of repressed hatred and, you know, that kind of thing.
Like a Trump rally.
And, yeah, exactly, like a Trump rally, yeah. So they play this track first, then they play the whole set, and that actually goes down pretty well. So,
right.
And they then go, excuse me, into the green room, which in theatrical terms is a place where you go to chill out after a gig or during a show. It's a sort of communal place where everyone can go and hang out.
But the hoi polloi can't get in.
Exactly, yes. And they walk into the green room and they spot a body on the floor. So okay. And a girl has been murdered by one of the occupants of the green room. So there's three other people in there. There's another girl and two guys.
Okay.
And so they're witness to this. And they get locked in there with these people whilst the people outside try and figure out what to do. And they call a man who is nominally their leader, who's played by Patrick Stewart of Star Trek.
So is he a punk? I mean, a skinhead?
He's an old school skinhead, so...
Right.
And when he arrives, he's pretty unhappy with the whole situation. And his orders are to make sure there's no witnesses. So he doesn't want the police coming there because, mm-hmm. you know, in the basement they've been making and selling drugs, quite a lot of drugs. It looks like they've been making mm-hmm. crystal meth or something. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't want the police involved at all.
Mm-hmm.
So his orders are no witnesses.
Take out the band.
Yeah, kill them and make sure that nobody knows. Make it look like an accident. Go and dump them in the woods. Make it look like an accident.
Okay, so they know this?
Well, yeah, they hear this going on because the walls in this place are paper thin, so they know exactly what's going to happen to them. And in a really nice twist, we find out earlier on in the film that one of them does some kind of martial art.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get locked in the room... the expectation is that this guy will be really handy.
Mm-hmm.
And when they make a break for it, he's the first one to get killed. So it's like, oh, so that's done. So now they're down to three people.
Mm-hmm.
They decide to try and make a break for it.
Okay.
And fail to do so. One of them gets killed. Actually, two of them get killed. One of them gets shot. Another one gets his throat ripped out by a massive dog. And the other two run back to the green room and try and find a way out whilst they're in there. And they spot what they think is daylight underneath the floorboards.
So is this like a thriller?
It's a thriller / horror movie. So I'd call it a survival horror film.
Okay.
So I think it's in the same kind of ballpark as something like Series 7?
Series 7?
Yeah.
Well, don't go comparing just anything with Series 7.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's that good. So it's in the same kind of ballpark as that, I think.
Listener, I'll talk about that later.
Okay, and also as things like Battle Royale as well.
Yeah. So the skinheads are kind of a generic... scary bad guy like in I Know What You Did Last Summer or something.
Yes, but there are they're not all bad. So there's one guy who doesn't really want to have anything to do with this because he knows that it's just completely wrong to be doing what they're doing.
To kill people.
Yeah, exactly. So there's one guy, in fact there's more than one guy who's on their side.
Okay.
But there are, let's say, the majority of the neo-Nazis are on Patrick Stewart's side.
Not good guys.
Are not good guys. Yeah.
We should make a motivational poster of that.
Yes. So it then ends up with just Anton Yelchin's character and Imogen Poot's character. They're the sole survivors. And then he tells a story, a really chilling story, of going paintballing one day and facing a bunch of former Marines who'd been on a tour of either Afghanistan or Iraq, and they're now doing paintball, and he just said they were absolutely terrifying. They just took everybody out really quickly. Mm-hmm. No hope of any no hope of hitting them at all.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, there was this one guy who was with us who just completely lost it in the second round and just went flying at them with everything he had, and he managed to take out a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and I think that's what we've got to do, because
got to berserk,
because we just don't have a chance against these people.
Mm-hmm.
So that is their, you know, that's their sole way out, is to just go really extreme and over the top,
right?
which does pay off for them. So they do manage to get away, and they survive. And although I am spoiling what happens in this film, I'm trying not to spoil it too much, because there's a lot of thrills and a lot of really good stuff in it.
Right.
So I'm kind of shying away from spoiling it too much about how they get away and that kind of thing. I really want to talk about the tone of it and what a quality piece of work it is.
Okay.
In that, as you and I agree on sort of stuff with films, is that it's about one thing. It's a really simple story.
Right. Like and John Wick.
Exactly. Yeah. So it executes that to perfection.
Right.
And Jeremy Saulnier, who's the director of this, his previous film, as I said, was a film called Blue Ruin, which is very well liked. It's got very good reviews and ratings and that kind of thing. And I think I have seen Blue Ruin, and I think that although it is very good as a debut, it's a bit uneven, and it's a little bit unfocused in places. And that's not really to do with it's not really to do with like the quality of the script or the direction or anything like that. It's just that it doesn't hang together quite well enough for me personally.
Right.
But Green Room, on the other hand, once the premise is, you know, solidifies, it's absolutely single-minded from that point on.
Right.
And you are in no doubt that the people that they're facing are formidable, single-minded force. So it turns out that they're not. There are chinks in the armor. There are people who are going to help them out because they realize that it's all wrong.
Killing people
is wrong. So you know, performance wise, Patrick Stewart, who has done sort of bad guy extreme roles in the past that I haven't seen, but I'm aware that they exist.
Have you seen his Pharaoh?
His what?
Pharaoh.
No, I haven't.
Yeah.
What are you referring to there?
He played Pharaoh in some random TV movie.
Oh, really?
That I saw. He's wearing eyeliner.
Right. And
It's very fetching.
Is he any good?
It's just Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. So, I mean, it is just Patrick Stewart in this. But if you could imagine, you know, he... In terms of things like Picard and Professor X in the X-Men series.
Oh, yes, of course.
He plays...
Have we talked about how I don't buy X-Men at all?
No, we haven't, but let's move on in a minute. So, you know, if you can imagine that kind of... that benign authority, but you know he's a good guy.
Right, yeah.
And then translate that into a neo-Nazi whose authority is not benign... And he's most definitely a bad guy.
We like upside down things, like payback.
It's definitely that. So it's definitely a man who I think what's most scary about him is he's softly spoken and he doesn't move very quickly. So he's a man who's sure of himself.
Right.
And that's scary. You know, he believes in the stuff that he talks about.
Right.
And although he does make very detailed plans, his henchmen are useless. So he's let down
like
by
stormtroopers.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much like stormtroopers. So Green Room, I recommend it very, very highly.
Cool.
And it's a film I've been wanting to get off my chest for a while, actually, since I saw it.
Yeah. So you like it because it's pure and it does what it does well, and it's got good performance from Patrick Stewart.
Yeah. Yeah,
but you said something about the tone.
Yeah, so the tone, the set design, costume design, a film like this stands or falls not just on the quality of its performances and direction. It also stands or falls on the quality of how good it looks. So it looks authentic.
Right.
You know, this
is it set in present day?
Yes. Yeah. This place that they play in looks like the kind of places that I've been to in America.
Yeah.
It's scuzzy and dirty and horrible, and you would never want to go there again kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that stuff is absolutely spot on.
Right.
And the detail of the green room And again, the basement that they break into, because I was going to say that they think they see daylight through the floorboards.
Oh, sorry, yes.
But they don't. It's not daylight. It's actually lights from the basement, and that's where that's they funny. Find all the drugs paraphernalia and stuff like that. All of that detail is just amazing. And you know, just like the van that they're touring in, and it all just looks really squalid and nasty. Exactly how you imagine touring in a band like that in the Pacific Northwest would be like, apart from, of course, being hunted by neo-Nazis through the woods.
So why do you think he made it, this chap?
Jeremy,
why did he make the film?
Jeremy Saulnier.
Yeah.
I think that he's got a... He seems to have a bee in his bonnet about vengeance and sort of how pointless violence is and how it doesn't really lead to anything. So I'll give you a little potted plot of Blue Ruin, which is his previous film.
Mm.
So the sort of anti-hero of the piece is a guy who is not a killer. He's not a psychopath at all. But his family, or some of his family, have been killed by a man. And he hears that this man is out of jail. So he decides to go after him. But he's not a killer. Okay. And he just makes an almighty mess of everything that he does. And... Right.
You should talk to Mel Gibson.
Exactly, yes.
For Out of Payback, not just Mel Gibson.
No, so, you know, Blue Ruin is about how vengeance is just a waste of time.
Right.
And won't actually bring you peace and quiet. And, you know, Green Room, the stupid thing that they witness in the room just turns out to be, you know, this young woman was killed for nothing at all. You know, it's just ridiculous. And then the whole situation just spins out of control. So the two films are very similar in that regard.
Right.
You know, he has a thing for saying that violence is just pointless, vengeance is pointless, and then seeing how far you can go with that.
Right.
How far you can spin that out into a very effective film.
So when you say survival horror, I think... I think of I Know What You Did Last Summer, I think of Nightmare on Elm Street.
Okay, so it's not supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. So it's nothing like that. I'm trying to think of a non supernatural. I mean, Saw, I suppose.
Right. I haven't seen Saw.
You haven't seen Saw. So
that's okay though. It doesn't mean you can't use it as an example.
I use that as an example. Maybe without the blood and gore, but certainly the sense of terror and the single location is definitely a factor there.
So that's but interesting. Something because you know I guessed. I had my silly guess, and actually what I should have done is had my real guess. I thought it was going to be too close to the mark, but my real guess was some kind of intense actorly play about actors in the green room at the theatre in Stratford-upon-Avon.
Which is your nemesis.
Yeah. But actually, you know, very much in my head about that was that it was going to be a single location.
Okay. And it is largely a single location.
So I would have been a little bit right.
Yeah, so I think once they get to the Skinhead Bar, I'd say that 70% of the action takes place in the green room.
Mm-hmm.
So they have occasional forays out of there. They go back there, and then the climax of the film takes place somewhere else. Not in the green room.
Did I tell you that we did watch the... The film about the guy who's buried somewhere in Iraq.
Oh, Buried, with Ryan Reynolds. Buried. I really loved that film.
That is tough.
It is a tough watch, though, isn't it?
It is tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's terrific. That's a single location. I think he's really good in that. He really sells the premise, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had no. Yeah, I was never out of the moment at any point. I was always right in the moment. It's just that I didn't really want to be.
No, it is, I mean, obviously, very cheap, I should think.
Yeah.
You could shoot that on a soundstage somewhere, a very small soundstage.
Yeah.
In fact, you could shoot it in your front room because all of the other stuff is done using voice acting.
Mm-hmm.
No spoilers, though. Not for that. But yeah, I think bleak, more bleak.
Yeah.
More bleak.
Yeah, but no spoilers.
No spoilers, no. It plays out how you think it might.
Cool. Okay, so we have a question. Then we've got a couple of threads to pull after that.
Okay.
First, the question.
Yes.
What's the point of it? Why is the world better because it exists?
Why is the world better because of Green Room? It's a fantastic piece of entertainment. And there are too few films like this that are this good.
Right.
In the world.
It's just well made.
Yeah. Well made, well acted, well designed, good story. It's short. It's 90 minutes. You know,
it sounds short. I assumed it was short. Right?
Yeah, it's almost, and I mean, I'd almost say it's a piece of exploitation cinema in that regard. In fact, maybe it is actually a piece of exploitation cinema, but it's done very well.
What does that mean?
Exploitation cinema. So this sort of goes back to the 60s and 70s when people were knocking out cheapo films that featured violence and quite a lot of sex. So the kind of thing that Roger Corman was doing back in the day. Also, Troma. To an extent, some of the stuff that Hammer films did as well. So, you know, they would feature sex and violence and that kind of thing. And it was
Who's being exploited in this? The actors?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, so when I say it's like a piece of exploitation, it's the tone of exploitation.
No, but in the original films that were called exploitation because presumably someone felt that someone was being exploited.
Yeah, so usually it would be women.
Okay, so it was the kind of moral...
Lurid, yeah.
Yeah.
Lurid stuff. Wow. But these days, you know, you would say that... do you remember when Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez made that duo of terrible films, Planet Terror and Death Proof, they were called. Did you see those?
Yes, I don't think I've seen either of them. I kind of would like to, but...
Okay, so what they were trying to do there was kind of ape... They were trying to ape an exploitation film vibe. And
which also... I mean, so does Pulp Fiction and stuff, right? I mean,
yeah, to an extent, yes. Although I think Pulp Fiction is a bit classier. In fact, it's a lot classier than those two films. Those two films are absolute rubbish.
Pulp Fiction's massively over-liked.
It's not.
We've had this conversation.
We have, yes.
It's no Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, it's much better than Reservoir Dogs. But it is very derivative, as is Reservoir Dogs derivative as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're both derivative films.
Everything's derivative.
Yeah, nothing's original.
I didn't like that episode about the internet.
So although it's in the style of an exploitation film, nobody's actually being exploited.
No, I get that. I was just...
Yeah.
You're wondering why the original... Okay, so hang on. All right, that's good. All right, I buy that.
Okay.
I think I'd quite like to watch it.
Yeah, I think you'd enjoy it. It's lean and mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's making me want to watch John Wick again.
Yeah, there's a sequel coming.
Oh, yeah, I saw. Yeah. maybe that'll be good.
Hopefully.
There's a sequel to Blade Runner coming. We've talked about this already.
Which I'm very excited about.
Yeah, you're going to have to be excited about that on your own. Basically, I have to let you watch it, and then you can tell me whether it's okay for me to watch.
Yeah, fair enough. The thing is that I listened to the Empire podcast this week, and one of the, I think it was Helen O'Hara, who's one of the regular contributors, said that, you know, Denis Villeneuve could basically direct the phone book at the moment, and I'd be pleased about that.
Right.
And I think Denis Villeneuve's a fantastic filmmaker, and you know, Blade Runner is in the right hands, as far as I'm concerned.
I think
he'll do an amazing job of it.
Okay, so two other threads we had to follow. Number one, surely we've talked about Series 7: The Contenders on this show before.
I think maybe we touched on it, but I don't think we've ever talked about it properly. Maybe we should in a future podcast.
Oh, I won't spoil it. I'll wait until we spoil it in the future.
I think we should talk about that. And maybe you should take the role of talking about the film and I can ask you questions about it, because you've seen it probably more times than I have.
I've seen it a few more times. I don't know whether I should take that role. I might do it wrong.
Well, okay. But the thing is, if I take it, then you've seen it more than I have. You'll just interrupt me all the way through. So you should do it, and then I can interrupt you.
Okay, or I could just pretend.
Yeah,
And other the other thing was X-Men.
Okay, so you don't get X-Men.
I mean, why? What is there even to like about X-Men?
What don't you like about it?
Well, it's just... I just don't care. At all. About what's happening. Like... things crash into things and stuff.
Yeah, it's become increasingly about that in the later films. In the earlier films, I'd say in the first two films, X-Men was always an allegory for something else. So it's not about mutants.
Yeah,
it's about being different.
I think in order to get it, you probably have to already be in the mythology, right?
Yeah, and I was already in that before I watched the films.
Yeah, that's probably okay to have films that you have to already be in the mythology to get, but it means I don't get them.
Fair enough.
Okay.
So, listener, I recommend Green Room.
Yeah. It sounds really good.
It is very good. I'd say, you know, it's in terms of its visceral thrills, it's this year's John Wick.
Wow.
Yeah, because John Wick is about one thing, isn't it?
It is.
People keep asking me if I'm back.
And I'm thinking...
I'm back. Yeah.
I'm thinking, yeah.
Yeah. So, there we go.
But it's still not as good as the speech from the middle of Johnny Mnemonic. Which he says he wants fresh hotel sheets.
That's a fair request.
But people keep trying to cut off his head.
That's also a fair request for them to stop doing that.
Yeah, it's a really good speech. It's a really good film.
Johnny Mnemonic. It's not as good as The Matrix.
But it's in a way though it is. I mean, listener, take this with a pinch of salt, seriously. But
yeah.
If you can bring yourself to let it be what it is, Johnny Mnemonic is a highly entertaining film.
Yeah, it is. I've seen it once, and I thought it was pretty good. I thought that Henry Rollins tries his very best to destroy the film.
Poor old Henry Rollins.
He's not good.
But it's all right because he's propped up by Ice-T.
Ice-T and Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Keanu.
They make Keanu look like...
I think Udo Kier is in that as well.
Who was a world-beating actor.
Yeah.
Who?
He was a guy who worked with Andy Warhol back in the day. And he was also... He's been in quite a few films since then. Some David Lynch movies. He was in the first Blade film with Wesley Snipes.
So my favourite bit of Johnny Mnemonic is when they're going to do some of the character establishment stuff that you get in a lull in the action. They're in some kind of sewer or something, and the girl turns to him and says, "So you got parents and stuff?" And he just turns to her and goes, "You got parents and stuff?"
Why does he say that? Is his head messed up?
Well, actually, it turns out he can't remember his parents because he's dumped all of his childhood memories in order to fit more gigabytes into his
of course,
brain.
Right. Everyone would like to do that.
So it's a sensitive subject. But I just love
the delivery,
the way they deal with the kind of establishing characters. You know, they just move on from it.
I'm pretty sure that most of the Conservative Party would like to dump the memories of their childhood being bullied by their fathers.
Right.
It's the only way you can explain their current behaviour.
Right. Oh, we've strayed onto more politics than usual.
I just thought I'd throw that grenade into the room there. We'll lose our listener now because they're probably a Conservative voter.
Okay, I honestly think it's extremely unlikely.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
I don't know any Conservative voters, but I do believe that they exist.
They do. Well, yeah, they must exist.
Okay, do some plugging.
Okay. So I present a music and movie review show on Glastonbury FM 107.1. This is the point when you say it reaches all the way down to the Wells.
Yeah, but it just passed the Wells.
But actually, it reaches a bit further now because they've got a new transmitter.
Yep.
That goes out live. Well, actually, mostly live, occasionally pre-recorded, between 6 and 7 on a Thursday, every Thursday, except for times when it's not, when I'm on holiday. And it's repeated between 2 and 3 on a Friday. So it's movie reviews. It's not just stuff that's out of the cinema. It's stuff that's out on Blu-ray and DVD, stuff that I'm interested in. I do a roundup of movies that are on TV at the weekend. A look at what's
useful for
on...
catching up if you don't, if you don't catch things at the cinema.
Yeah. A look at what's on at local cinemas in the next week. And also I now do a roundup of DVD and Blu-ray releases as well.
Mm-hmm. And once the show featured a recording of The Good Robot Andes.
Yes, it did.
How did that go down?
I don't know, because I never get any feedback from anybody about how the show is going. I never get any feedback from anyone.
Okay.
So
maybe we should just change the show from what you normally do.
Maybe.
To a show like What's the Internet Made Of? See whether anyone notices.
Well, I think there is definitely scope for putting What's the Internet Made Of on Glastonbury FM.
Yeah, see if it reaches down past the street.
Past the Wells, yeah. So it's not just on FM, there's a live stream as well. So go to Glastonbury FM, I forget the website name. I'm going to have to look it up, listener.
I've been increasingly had the feeling of someone watching someone who's trying to care.
It's glastonburyfm.co.uk.
So the listeners, no, I don't like to do this because I like our listeners who listen to the podcast.
Yes.
To enjoy and feel included. But the listeners who are listening to our podcast on YouTube.
Oh, yes.
Would have seen your face glow blue at that point.
Oh, really? Why?
As you looked something up on the internet. So that was...
Oh, I wonder if I can do that again.
That was a privilege. Yes, there you go.
How bizarre. There we go.
So if you watch on YouTube, you too could see that. It's really not worth it, but I hear that the young people...
No, it is worth it. YouTube is worth it.
I'm not saying YouTube isn't worth it. I'm just saying watching us on YouTube is pretty much the same as listening to us, except you have to look at us a bit.
I'll just finish plugging and then you can plug. Okay, so I do podcast highlights of the show as well, and I put selected reviews on The Tube of You, as you were just talking about.
And does that have video?
It does.
Okay, I didn't realise that.
Yeah, yes, it does.
I confess, I haven't watched the
So I take a camera to the studio and video myself doing reviews.
But you shouldn't sound like you don't care. You do. Yeah, this is a good show that people are interested to watch, and they can access it through the internet.
They can through the internet. Yes,
now
that we talked
know
about
how they work.
Now that they know how they can do it,
yeah,
and how the internets are run by governments and universities.
Yeah, although actually, I looked that up afterwards. I looked that up afterwards. It seems like it's mostly run by companies, and I was wrong about that.
Companies? That's even worse.
Yeah. Well, who else are they going to be? Those are your three options.
The thing is,
they?
If it's governments and universities, they're so incompetent that they won't be able to do anything with it, but companies would actually try and exploit it in some way.
I think it's mostly owned by people like Cisco.
Oh, okay. That's terrible. Yeah. That's worse than I thought.
I think that what I read was probably quite US-centric, so I'm pretty sure quite a lot of the backbone in Europe, it was originally established in universities, and I think it's the universities still play a significant part.
Yes.
My plug-in, yeah.
Go.
Sorry, we accidentally went back on.
Get us out
of
this anti-establishment hole that I've dug us into.
However, if you like the establishment and you would like to contribute to the profits of Google and also to the profits of me, although to be honest, it's like I get like 40p if you buy a copy of Rabbit Escape from the Google Play Store. That's a game for your Android phone or tablet in which you have to rescue some rabbits. I wrote it myself. It's open source, free software.
Mm.
You can download it for free from the website. But if you buy it for 60p, 20p of that will go to supporting Google.
Well, that's just a reason to get it for free.
Yeah, well, yeah. We'll try and think about the other 40p.
Oh, yeah. But you get 40p, okay. Yeah. So buy it.
Yeah. What else? Also, speaking of the Tubes of You, which I like as a name, I make videos about programming. I'm halfway through a series called How to Write a Programming Language, in which I explain to you how I wrote a programming language.
Mm-hmm.
But it's only going to be like four fairly short videos, half an hour or so, and you're going to find out how to write a whole programming language.
That's awesome. So what does it have a name?
The language is called Cell.
Okay.
Which stands for Cell Elementary Learning Language.
Excellent.
It's a recursive acronym.
Right, and that's on the Tubes of You.
Yeah, that's on the Tubes of You. Or if you just look at the About page for The Good Robot Andes, there's links to my website, which is artificialworlds.net, and I've got a blog on there. I talk about open source things and some other things I've missed out. But yeah, if you're in the least bit interested in programming, either sort of more advanced topics or beginning topics, check out my channel on YouTube, check out my blog, follow me on Twitter.
I have a Twitter account as well. @cockers_97.
Cool.
Yeah, so I post the movies of the week to there, although I didn't do it last week. I must do that. Although it's too late now, because they've all gone.
Yeah, what you should do is get over to the About page of The Good Robot Andes. If you Google for The Good Robot Andes, you'll find us. Click on About button. There's also, we should do the plugging for the actual podcast, right? So
yeah.
The podcast has an RSS feed on there, so you can stick it into your podcatcher on your phone to download it every time, or you can just subscribe on YouTube to the videos, or there's various other ways of signing up. There's iTunes and Stitcher and other services.
TuneIn Radio as well.
Yeah. So
we're everywhere. Oh, no wonder
we're
people...
also on, yeah. When I get round to updating it, we're on SoundCloud as well.
Oh, yes, okay. I think you mentioned that last time. Yeah.
It's annoying because you can only have a certain amount of audio up on SoundCloud at a time, so I have to delete the old stuff.
Oh.
So you're better off subscribing to the RSS feed on the website. But if you're a SoundCloud kind of a person, well, you know, subscribe on there too.
And is it true you can subscribe and get MP3 or OGG?
It is true.
That's most excellent.
Yeah. If you love freedom, you can listen to OGG Vorbis.
I love freedom.
Right.
Yeah.
If your device doesn't support OGG Vorbis, you can subscribe to the MP3 feed and hate freedom.
My device plays everything.
I'm Batman.
I'm Batman.
Right, well, we've gone well beyond what was at all in the least bit interesting or entertaining to listen to.
Indeed. That must be it.
So that's it. See you next time.
Goodbye.